I mean your girlfriend's," he said. But I didn't miss the way he blushed. "Oh," I said. "No, it's okay. Nikki is going to Peru to visit family." Elliot didn't say anything. He watched me choose a book and rearrange my own pillows before getting comfortable. Thinking of how I felt looking at a picture of him with his friends and how much more I wanted to know about his life outside of this closet, I considered my next words, letting them tumble around in my head before speaking. "I stopped hanging out with most of my friends for a while when Mom got sick, so I could spend time with her." He nodded, and though his eyes stayed fixed on the notebook in front of him, I could tell his attention was solely on me. I scanned the first page, turning to the chapter I'd just started. And then when she was gone, I didn't really feel like going to sleepovers and talking about boys. It's kind of like they all grew up while I put myself back together. Nikki and I are still good, but I think it's because she doesn't really hang out outside of school either. She has an enormous family she sees a lot. I could feel him watching me now, but I didn't turn, knowing I'd never be able to finish if I did. The words seemed to bubble up in my chest, things I'd never talked about with anyone. "Dad tried to get me to hang out more," I continued. "He even arranged for me to go to this kids' club thing down by his work." I glanced quickly up at Elliot and then back down. He said it was to socialize and make friends, but it wasn't. It was a group for grieving children. "Oh, we all knew what we were doing there, though," I told him. "I remember walking into this huge white room. The walls were covered in things I think were supposed to be teen-related. Boy band posters, pink and purple graffiti on bulletin boards, fuzzy bean bags and baskets of magazines." I picked at a stray thread on my jeans. It was like someone's mom had come in and put up all this random stuff they thought teenage girls should have in their room. "I remember looking around that first day," I continued, pulling my thick ponytail over my shoulder and fidgeting with the ends, thinking how weird it was that we were all there to just hang out. After a few days, I noticed that all the girls had almost the same haircut. Like 7 girls all around my age with these chin-length bobs. A few weeks later, I found out that all those girls were like me. They had all lost their moms. Most of them just got these simple, easy haircuts. I paused and began twisting the ends of my hair around my finger. "But my dad learned how to put my hair in ponytails, what kind of shampoo to buy. He even had someone teach him how to braid and use the curling iron for special occasions. He could have done what was easiest for him and just cut it all off, but he didn't." For the first time, I looked up to see Elliot watching me. His eyes were wide with understanding, and he reached over and took one of my hands. "Did I ever tell you that I have my mom's hair?" I said. He shook his head, but gave me a real smile.
"I think you have the prettiest hair I've ever seen."
Now, Thursday, October 5th. I stand outside the entrance to Napolito on 9th, and without having to look too deeply inside, I know Elliot is already in there. I know this because it's 8:10. We agreed to meet at 8, and Elliot never runs behind schedule. Something tells me that hasn't changed. Pushing inside, I spot him immediately. His napkin slides to the floor, and his thighs awkwardly collide with the table in his rush to stand. I notice 2 things. 1, he's wearing a dress jacket, nice jeans, and a pair of black dress shoes that look newly polished. 2, he got a haircut. It's still longish on top, but cut very short at the sides. It makes him somehow a little less highbrow literary hipster and more skater hot. It's amazing that a look he would never have even attempted in adolescence is one he can absolutely rock at 29. That said, I'm sure he has only his stylist to thank. The boy I grew up with would give more thought to which type of pen he used to write a grocery list than what he looked like on any given day. Fondness clutches me. I make my way to him, trying to breathe through the hum of electricity surging in my bloodstream. Maybe it's the benefit of having had time to get ready tonight and that I'm not in my scrubs, but this time I feel the way his eyes move from my hair to my shoes and back up. He's visibly shaken when I step closer and stretch to give him a quick hug. Hi. Swallowing, he lets out a strangled,
hi,
and then pulls my chair out for me.
Your hair is... you look... beautiful.
Thanks. Happy birthday, Elliot. Friends, not a date. I repeat like a prayer. I'm just here to make up for breakfast and to clear the air. I attempt to brand it into my brain and my heart.
Thank you.
Elliot clears his throat, smiling without teeth, eyes tight. And really, where to start? The waiter pours water into my glass and slides my napkin onto my lap for me. The entire time, Elliot is staring down at me as if I've come back from the grave. Is that what it feels like for him? At what point would he have given up on getting in touch with me? Or would the answer be never?
How was work today?
He asks, starting somewhere safe. It was busy. He nods, sipping his water and then putting it down, letting his fingers trace drops of condensation as they flow from the lip to the base.
You're in pediatrics.
Yes.
And did you know as soon as you started med school that you wanted to work in that?
I shrug. Pretty much. An exasperated smile quirks his mouth.
Give a little mace.
This makes me laugh. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be weird. After a deep inhale and long, shaking exhale, I admit, I guess I'm nervous. Not that it's a date. I mean, of course it isn't. I told Sean I was meeting an old friend for dinner tonight and promised myself I would give him the whole story when I got home, which I still intend to do, but he was preoccupied with setting up his new TV and didn't really seem to notice when I stepped out anyway.
I'm nervous too,
Elliot says. It's been a long time.
It has,
he says.
But I'm glad you called. Or texted, rather.
You replied so quickly, I say, thinking of his old flip phone again. I wasn't prepared for that. He beams with mock pride.
I have an iPhone now.
Let me guess, Nick Jr.'s hand-me-down? Elliot scowls.
As if.
He takes another sip of water and adds,
I mean, Andreas updates his phone way more often.
Her laughter dies down, but the eye contact remains. Well, in case you were wondering, I say, the score is even at 1-1. Liz gave me your number, though I probably should have remembered it. It's the same one you always had. He nods, and my eyes flicker down reflexively when he lick bites his bottom lip.
Liz is great.
I can tell, I say. I like her. Clearing my throat, I add quietly, speaking of, sorry about how I left at breakfast.
I get it.
He answers quickly.
It's a lot to process.
It's almost laughable. An ocean of information separates us, and there are an infinite number of places to begin. Start at the beginning and work forward. Start now and work backward. Jump in somewhere in the middle. I honestly don't even know where to begin, I admit.
Maybe,
he says hesitantly.
Maybe we check out the menu, order some wine, and then catch up. You know, like people do over dinner.
I nod, relieved that he seems as mentally sturdy as ever, and lift the menu to scan it. But it feels like the words on the page are trumped by all the questions in my head. Where does he live in Berkeley? What is his novel about? What about him has changed? What stayed the same? But the petty, traitorous thought that lurks in the guilty shadows of my brain is the bravery it took him to end a relationship after seeing me for less than 2 minutes. I mean, unless it wasn't very established. Or was already on its way out. Is this the worst place to start? Am I a complete maniac? I mean, at the very least, it was the last real thing we talked about yesterday, right? Is everything okay with... I ask, wincing. He looks up from his menu, and maybe it's my slightly anxious expression that clues him in.
With Rachel.
I nod, but her name triggers a defensive reaction in me. He should be with someone named Rachel, who reads with relish every issue of The New Yorker, and works in nonprofit, and composts all her eggshells and beet peelings so she can grow her own produce. Meanwhile, I'm a mess with never-ending med school loans, mommy issues, daddy issues, Elliot issues, and a shameful subscription to U.S. Weekly.
Things are okay, actually, he says, I think. I hope eventually we can be friends again. In hindsight, it could never have been more.
The sentiment slips into my bloodstream, warm and electric. Elliot.
I heard what you said,
he says earnestly.
You're engaged, I get it. But it will be hard for me to just be your friend, Macy. It's not in my DNA.
He meets my eyes and puts the menu back down near his arm.
I'll try, but I already know this about myself.
I feel his disarming honesty chipping away at the resilient shell around me. I wonder how many times he could tell me he loved me before I melted into a puddle at his feet. Then I think some ground rules are in order. I say,
ground rules.
He repeats, nodding slowly.
As in no expectations?
I nod.
And maybe anything you want to know, I'll tell you, and vice versa?
If this is quid pro quo, I'm going to have to put on my big girl pants and get through it. Although everything inside me is rioting in panic. I agree.
So,
he says, easing into a smile.
I don't know what you'd like to know about Rachel. We were friends first, for years in grad school and after.
The idea of him being friends with another female for years is a knife pushed slowly into my sternum. Taking a sip of water, I manage an easy follow-up. Grad school?
MFA from NYU,
he says, smiling. Rubbing a hand over his hair as if he's not quite used to the feel of it, he adds,
Looking back, it seems a little like when we hit 28, we defaulted into a relationship.
I know what he means. I turned 28 and defaulted to Sean. He's a mind reader.
Tell me about this guy you're going to marry.
This is a minefield, but I may as well put it all right up front and be honest, too. We met at a dinner, welcoming all of the incoming residents, I say, and he doesn't need me to do the math for him, but I do. In May. His brows slowly inch up beneath his shaggy mop of hair.
Oh.
We hit it off right away. Elliot nods, watching me intensely.
I assume you'd have to.
I blink down to the table, clearing my throat and trying not to respond defensively. Elliot has always been brutally honest, but it never came out sharply at me before. To me, his words were always gentle and adoring. Now my heart is pounding so hard, I feel it swooshing between us. And it makes me wonder whether our individual heartaches are silently duking this out from inside our bodies.
Sorry.
Elliot mumbles, reaching across the table before thinking better of touching me.
I didn't mean it to come out like that. It's just fast, that's all.
I look up and give him a weak smile. I know. It did move fast.
What's he like?
Mellow. Nice. I twist my napkin in my lap, wishing I could come up with better adjectives to describe the man I plan to marry. He has a daughter. Elliot listens, nearly unblinking. He's a benefactor for the hospital, I say. Well, in a sense, he's an artist. His work is... I sense that I'm beginning to brag, and I don't know why it leaves me feeling unsettled. It's pretty popular right now. He donates a lot of the newer art installations over at Benioff Mission Bay. Elliot leans in.
Sean Chen?
Yeah. You've heard of him?
Books and art run in similar circles around here.
He explains, nodding.
I've heard he's a good guy. His art is stunning.
Pride swells, warm in my chest. He is. It is, yeah. And another truth rolls out of me before I can catch it. And he's the first guy I've been with who... Shit. I try to think of a better way to end this sentence than the bald truth, but my mind is completely blank but for Elliot's earnest expression and the gentle way his hands are cupping his water glass. He unravels me. He waits and finally asks,
Who what, Mace?
God damn it. Who didn't feel like some sort of betrayal to... Elliot picks up my unfinished sentence with a gentle...
Oh, yeah.
I meet his eyes.
I've never had one of those.
He adds quietly. Actually, this is a minefield. blinking down to the table with my heart in my windpipe, I barrel on. So that's why I said yes when he proposed, impulsively. I'd always told myself the first man I was with and didn't feel wrong about, I would marry.
That seems like some sturdy criteria.
It felt right.
But really?
Elliot says, drawing a finger through a drop of water that's made its way to the tabletop.
According to that criteria, technically wouldn't that person be me?
The waiter is my new favorite human because he approaches, intent on taking our order just after Elliot says this, preventing me from the awkward dance of a non-answer. Glancing at the menu, I say, I'll have tacos, dorados, and the citrus salad. Looking up, I add, I'll let him pick the wine. As I probably could have guessed, Elliot orders the caldo tlalpeño. He always loved spicy food, and a bottle of the Horse and Plow Sauvignon Blanc before handing his menu to the waiter with quiet thanks. Turning back to me, he says,
I knew exactly what you were going to order. Citrus salad? It's like Macy's food dream.
My thoughts trip over one another at this, at how easy it is, at how in sync we still are right out of the gate. It's too easy, really. And it feels unfaithful in a really surreal and backward way to the man who's a couple of miles away, installing a television in the small home we share. I sit up, working to infuse some emotional distance into my posture.
And she retreats,
Elliot says, studying me. I'm sorry, I say. He reads every tiny move I make. I can't fault him for it. I do the same thing. It started feeling a little too familiar.
Because of the fiancé,
he says, tilting his head back, indicating elsewhere.
When's the wedding?
My schedule is pretty nuts, so we haven't set a date yet. It's partly the truth. Elliot's posture tells me he likes this answer, however disingenuous it may be, and it stirs the anxiety in my belly. But we're thinking next fall, I add quickly, straying even further from the truth now. Sean and I haven't discussed dates at all. Elliot narrows his eyes. Though if it's left to me, it will happen in whatever we're wearing at the courthouse. I am apparently really uninterested in planning a wedding. Elliot doesn't say much for a few loaded seconds, just lets my words reverberate around us. Then he gives me a simple, ah. I clear my throat awkwardly. So, tell me what you've been doing? He's interrupted only briefly when the waiter returns with our wine, displaying the label for Elliot, opening it tableside and offering a taste. There are ways in which Elliot's confidence throws me, and this is one. He grew up in the heart of California wine country, so he must be comfortable with this, but I've never seen him taste wine at the table. We were so young.
It's great,
he tells the waiter, then turns back to me while he pours, clearly dismissing the man from his thoughts.
How far back should I go?
How about start with now? Elliot leans into his chair, thinking for a few moments before he seems to figure out where to begin. And then it all rolls out of him, easy and detailed. He tells me that his parents are still in Healdsburg.
We couldn't pay Dad to retire.
That Nick Jr. is the district attorney for Sonoma County.
The way he dresses is straight out of some bad crime show, and I'd only say that in this safe space, but no one should wear shark skin.
Alex is in high school and an avid dancer.
I can't even blame my gushing on brotherly pride, Mace. She's really good.
George, as I know, is married to Liz and living in San Francisco.
He's a suit in an office. I honestly never really remember what his job title is.
And Andreas is living in Santa Rosa, teaching fifth grade math, getting married later this year.
Of all of us to end up working with kids, he would have been the least likely, but turns out he's the best at it.
The whole time he updates me, all I can think is that I'm getting the cream, skimmed from the top. Beneath it is still so much, volumes of tiny details I've missed. The food comes, and it's so good. But I eat it without giving it any attention, because I can't seem to get enough information, and neither can he. College years are outlined in the monochromatic ways of hindsight. Graduate school horror stories are exchanged with the knowing laugh of someone who has also suffered and seen the other side. But we don't talk about falling in love with someone else, and where that leaves us now. And no matter how much it's with us in every breath and every word, we don't talk about what happened the last time I saw him 11 years ago. Then, Monday, July 28th, 14 years ago. Our first summer with the cabin, my dad and I were there nearly every day, with only one trip home, late July, for a visit from his brother Kennett. Kennett had two daughters and a wife, Britt, whose idea of affection was a cupped hand around my shoulder. So when I came to her, whispering in mild horror that I thought I'd started my period, she handled me with the anticipated emotional sterility, buying me a box of pads and a box of tampons, and having her younger daughter Karen awkwardly explain the basic application process. Dad was better, but not by a very wide margin. Once we returned to the cabin that weekend, he referred to Mom's list, where at position 23 she had written, "When Maisie starts her period, make sure she doesn't have any questions about what is happening with her body. I know it's awkward, Menomor, but she needs to know that she is amazing and perfect, and if I were there, I would tell her the story in the envelope marked 23. Dad opened it, his cheeks pink.
"When I..."
He coughed, correcting.
"Your mother first started her,
I grabbed the letter from his hands and jogged upstairs, to the comfort of my library. "I used to have the worst cramps," it began, and the sight of her handwriting made my breastbone ache. "They would hit me at the most unexpected times, shopping with my friends or at a birthday party. Midol helped when I discovered it, but what helped the most was visualizing the pain evaporating from my stomach. I would imagine it again and again until the pain subsided. I don't know that it will work for you or if you will need this, but if you do, imagine my voice helping. You will be tempted to hate this thing that your body does. But it's your body's way of telling you everything is working, and that is a miracle. But most of all, Mendelsina, imagine how proud I am to share this with you. You're growing up. Starting my period was the process that eventually let me get pregnant with you when I was ready. Treat your body carefully. Take care of it. Don't let anyone abuse it, and don't abuse it yourself. Every inch of your skin I made diligently. Months I slaved over you. You are my masterpiece. I miss you. I love you. May." I blinked up, startled. At some point while I'd been reading, Elliot had materialized in the doorway, but he didn't see my tears until I'd turned my face to him. His grin slowly melted away as he took one step and then two closer to me, kneeling on the floor beside where I sat on the futon. His eyes searched mine.
"What's wrong?"
"Nothing," I said, shifting in my seat as I folded the letter. He eyed it before looking back at me. Nearly 15, he was already too perceptive. More and more it bothered me that our daily lives were these odd unknowns to each other. We gave updates whenever we met in here, who we spent time with, what we were studying. We talked about who irritated us, who we admired, and of course we shared our favorite words. He knew my two closest friends' names, Nikki and Danny, but not their faces. Although I'd seen their faces in the photograph in his room, I had the same limited information about Elliot's friends at school. I knew Brandon was quiet and calm, and Christian was a criminal record waiting to be written. In here, we read and we talked, and we learned about each other over time. But how could I tell him what was happening to me? It wasn't just that I got my period so much later than all my friends had, or even that Dad was struggling to relate to me, or that my mom was dead, or any of it. Or maybe it was all of it. I loved my dad more than anything, but he was so ill-equipped for some of this. Without a doubt, I knew he was downstairs, pacing, listening for the sound of my voice to know whether he had been right to let Elliot upstairs, or whether his instincts were all wrong. "I'm okay," I said, hoping I'd spoken loud enough for the words to reach downstairs. The last thing I wanted was both of them up here worrying about me. Frowning, Elliot took my face in his hands in a move that shocked me, and his eyes searched mine.
"Please tell me what's wrong. Is it your dad? School?"
"I really don't want to talk about it, El." I pulled back a little, wiping my face. My fingers came away wet, explaining Elliot's panic. I must have been really sobbing when he came in.
We tell each other everything in here, remember?
Reluctantly, he shifted back.
That's the deal.
I don't think you want to know this. He stared at me, unfazed.
I do want to know this.
Tempted to call his bluff, I looked him dead in the eye and said, I started my period. He blinked several times before straightening. Color spread from his neck to his cheekbones.
And you're upset about it?
Not upset. I bit my lip, thinking, relieved mostly. And then I read a letter from my mom, and now I'm a little sad. He smiled.
That sounded an awful lot like a question.
It's just that all your life you hear about periods. Talking about this with Elliot was actually not that bad. You wonder when it's going to happen, what it will be like, if you'll feel any different after. When your girlfriends get theirs, you're like, what's wrong with me? It's like a little biological time bomb sitting inside you. He bit his lip, trying to stifle an uncomfortable laugh.
Until now?
Yeah.
Well, do you feel any different?
I shook my head. Not really. Not like I thought I would anyway. It sort of feels like something is trying to gnaw its way out of my stomach. I'm a little testy. Elliot lifted the blanket and scooted next to me, wrapping his arm around my shoulders.
I'm not going to be any help, but I think I'm supposed to be happy for you.
You're being very mature and unboy-like about this. I expected less compassion and more bumbling. I grew lightheaded from the warmth of his body and the feeling of his arm around me. He exhaled a laugh into my hair.
I have a baby sister on the way, and a mom who insists it's my job to show her the ropes, remember? So I need you to explain everything.
I curled into his side, closing my eyes against the sting of tears I felt there.
Is there anything I can do?
He asked quietly. A weight settled heavily in my chest. Not unless you can bring my mom back. Silence pulsed around us, and I heard him inhaling in preparation a few times before speaking. Finally, he settled on a simple,
I wish I could.
I nodded against him, breathing in the sharp smell of his deodorant, the lingering smell of his boy sweat, the wet cotton smell of his t-shirt from the 15-foot run through the summer rain from his porch to mine. So weird that just hearing him say that made me feel a million times better.
Do you want to talk about it?
He whispered. No. His hand made the gentle path up and down my arm. I knew, without having to look too far and wide, that there were no other boys like Elliot anywhere.
I'm sorry you're grumpy.
Me too.
Do you want me to get a warm water bottle? I do that for my mom.
I shook my head. I wanted Mom to be here, reading her letter to me. He cleared his throat, asking quietly,
Because it would make it feel like I'm your boyfriend.
I swallowed, and the mood shifted in an instant. Boyfriend didn't seem to cover it. Elliot was kind of my every friend. I guess. He sat up, still all skinny arms and long twisty legs, but he was becoming something new, something more man than boy. At nearly 15, he had an Adam's apple and faint stubble on his chin, and his pants were too short. His voice had deepened.
I guess we're too young for that.
I nodded and tried to swallow, but my mouth had gone dry. Yeah. Now, Friday, October 6th. Early morning light filters in through the gauzy curtains, turning everything faintly blue. Outside on Elsie Street, garbage trucks rumble down the asphalt. The squealing of metal on metal, the crash of the bins against the truck, and the sound of garbage cascading into the compactor carries up from outside. Despite the way the world continues to move forward on the other side of the window, I'm not sure I'm ready to start the day. My ears still ring with snippets of conversation from dinner last night. I want to hold on to them for just a little longer, to relish the joy of having my best friend back in my life before all the complications that come along with it make their way to the surface. Sean turns to me, pulling me right up against him, pressing his face to my neck.
Morning.
He growls, hands already busy, mouth on my throat, my jaw. He works my pajama shorts down my hips, rolling over onto me.
Did you actually get a full night's sleep?
Miracle of miracles, I did. I run both hands into his hair, digging in the thick tangle of salt and pepper. Hunger flushes through me. We haven't had sex in over a week. We're still so new, I'm not sure we've ever gone that long before. When he reaches my mouth, I kiss him once before hesitation spikes in me, and I pull back a little. Wait.
Oh, period?
He asks, brows lifted. What? I say, and then shake my head. No, I just wanted to tell you about last night.
About last night?
He repeats, confused. About my dinner with Elliot. Sean's dark brows pull down now.
It could wait until after.
He presses into me, meaningfully. Oh, I guess it could, but the reality is that it probably shouldn't. Elliot and I didn't even touch again after I hugged him hello. It's not like anything happened. But it feels like I'm lying by not telling Sean who Elliot is, or rather who he was. It's nothing bad, I say, but Sean rolls off me anyway. One of the challenges you and I face is that we have these enormous histories that we couldn't possibly have laid out in the amount of time we've been together. He acknowledges this with a little nod. I told you I was having dinner with an old friend last night, and that's true.
Okay.
But he was really like my old... everything. I meet Sean's eyes and melt a little. They're the first thing I noticed about him because they're so deep and soulful and glimmering. His eyes are amazing. Brown, thickly lashed, and the way they lift gently at the outer edges easily makes them the best flirty eyes I've ever known. Right now, though, they're more guarded than playful. I shrug, amending. He was my first everything.
Your first...
My first true friend, my first love, my first...
sex.
He finishes for me. It's complicated.
How complicated?
He asks gently.
Everyone has exes. Did he hurt you?
Quickly, I shake my head. See, after Mom died, Dad was my whole world, but he still didn't know how to nurture the same way Mom had. And then I met Elliot, and it was like... I search for the right words. I had someone my age who really understood me and saw me for exactly who I was. He was like a best girlfriend and a first boyfriend all rolled into one. Sean's expression softens.
I'm glad, babe.
We had a fight one night and I realize now that I'm going to shut this down prematurely. I'm not sure I can finish the story. I needed some time to think and some time turned into 11 years. Sean's eyes widen a little.
Oh?
We ran into each other a few days ago.
I see. And it's the first time you've spoken since.
I swallow thickly. Right.
So there's some baggage to unpack.
He says, smiling a little. I nod, repeating, right.
And has this relationship been hanging over you all this time?
I don't want to lie to him. Yes. Other than the deaths of my parents, nothing looms larger in my life than Elliot.
Do you still love him?
I blink away. I don't know. Sean uses a gentle finger to turn my face to his.
I don't mind if you love him, Mace, even if you think you might always love him. But if it makes you wonder what you're doing here with me, then we need to talk about it.
It doesn't really. It's just been emotional to see him.
I get that.
He says quietly,
it brings up old stuff. I'm sure if I saw Ashley again, I'd struggle with all of that. Anger and hurt, and yeah, the love that I still have for her. I never got to fall out of love. I just had to move on when she walked out.
It's a perfect description. I never got to fall out of love. I just had to move on. He kisses me once.
We're not 18, babe. We're not coming into this without a few chinks in our armor. I don't expect you to have room in your heart for me only.
I'm so grateful to him right now, I nearly want to cry.
Well, work on the friendship. Do what you need to do.
He says, his weight returning above me, his body pushing against mine hard and ready.
but right now, come back to me.
I wrap my arms around him and press my face to his neck, but as he moves over me and then into me, I have a brief flash of bare honesty. It's good. The sex has always been good, but it isn't right. It doesn't set off alarm bells in my head, sure, but it doesn't send goosebumps across my skin either. It doesn't make my chest ache so deliciously I'm nearly breathless. I don't feel urgent or desperate or too hot in my own skin because I'm so hungry for him. And in a tight gasp that Sean reads as pleasure, I worry that Elliot is right, and I'm wrong, and, like always, he's taking care of both of our hearts while I flop around trying to figure it all out. I feel my thoughts circling something, the same thing over and over. How Elliot went home after seeing me and broke up with Rachel. He only had to see me to know, whereas I can barely trust a single feeling I have. Then, Wednesday, November 26th, 14 years ago. Dad pushed the cart down the aisle, coming to a stop in front of a freezer case full of enormous turkeys. We stared down at them together. Although Dad and I carried on many traditions since Mom died, we'd never done Thanksgiving alone. Then again, we never really did it with her, either. With two 21st-century, first-generation immigrants as parents, Thanksgiving wasn't really a holiday any of us had cared much about, but we had the cabin now, and nearly a week off with nothing else to do but capably chop firewood and read in front of the flames. It felt wasteful in a totally illogical way to not at least attempt the holiday meal. But standing here, faced with the prospect of making such an enormous production for two, cooking felt decidedly more wasteful.
"These are 13 pounds,
Dad said.
"At minimum."
With an expression of mild distaste, he hefted a bird out of the case and inspected it. "Don't they just have the..." I waved my hand toward the butcher, to the breasts displayed there. Dad stared at me, not getting it.
"The what?"
"You know, just smaller parts." He guffawed.
"The breasts?"
I groaned. Walking past him to find a bone-in turkey breast we could roast in less than half a day. Coming up behind me, Dad said,
"These are a more appropriate size."
Leaning in, he added with a repressed laugh,
"Decent-sized breasts."
Mortified, I shoved him away and moved to the produce section to get potatoes. Standing there with baby Alex in a sling was Elliot's mom, Miss Dina. She had a cart full of food, a phone to her ear as she chatted with someone, the sleeping baby against her chest, and she inspected yellow onions as if she had all the time in the world. She'd given birth 3 months ago and was here preparing to cook a huge meal for her troop of ravenous boys. I stared at her, feeling the twisting combination of admiration and defeat. Miss Dina made things look so easy. Dad and I could barely figure out how to make a holiday meal for two. She did a tiny double take when she saw me, and for maybe the first time in my life, I imagined myself through someone else's eyes. My swim team track pants, the baggy Yale sweatshirt Dad got for Mom years ago, flip-flops. And I stood, staring at the breadth of the produce, motherless and clearly overwhelmed. Miss Dina ended her call and pushed her cart over to me. She looked at my face, then let her eyes move all the way down to my toes and back up. "You and your dad are planning to cook tomorrow?" I gave her what I hoped was a humorously confident grin. "We're going to try." She winced, looking past me and pretending to fret. "Macy," she said, leaning in conspiratorially, "I have more food than I know what to do with, and with little Alex here, it would help me out a lot if you and your dad would come over. If you could help me peel potatoes and make the rolls, you'd be a lifesaver." Not in a million years would I have said no. It smelled like baking pie crust, melted butter and turkey all day, even in our house. The wind carried the smells of cooking into our window, and my stomach gnawed at itself. Miss Dina had told us to come over at 3, and I couldn't even count on Elliot to entertain me until then because no doubt he'd been put to work. I heard the lawnmower going, the vacuum running inside, And of course I heard the roar of football on the living room television, filtering from their house to ours. By the time we made our way over with wine and flowers at 3:02, I was nearly insane with anticipation. Dad made a good living, and our house in Berkeley had every material possession we could possibly need or want. But what we could never buy was chaos and bustle. We lacked noise and strife and the joy of overstuffed plates because everyone insisted that their favorite dish be made. Just inside their door, we were pulled like metal to magnets into the madness. George and Andreas shouted at the television. In the easy chair in the corner, Mr. Nick blew exuberant raspberries on Alex's tummy. Nick Jr. was polishing the dining room table, while Miss Dina poured melted butter into the crossed tops of rolls to put in the oven. And Elliot stood over the sink, peeling potatoes. I ran to him, reaching to take the peeler out of his hand. "I told your mom I would peel those." He blinked at me in surprise, reaching with a potato skin-covered finger to push his glasses up. I knew that helping her with dinner was just a ruse. After all, I'd been smelling the food all day, but for whatever reason, I was unable to give it up. The thing is, at 14, I was old enough to understand that many of the people who had lived in Healdsburg for many years would not have been able to afford to live in Berkeley. Although Healdsburg had been taken over by Bay Area money and the wine craze of the 90s, many people who lived here still worked for hourly wages and lived in older, mildly soggy houses. The wealth here was what was inside. The Petropolis family and the warmth and the knowledge passed down through generations of how to cook a meal like this for a family of this size. I watched as Miss Dina gave Elliot a different job, washing and chopping lettuce for the salad, which he did without complaint or instruction. Meanwhile, I hacked at the potatoes until Miss Dina came in and showed me how to peel them more slowly, in long, smooth strips.
"Nice dress,"
Elliot said once she'd left, his voice laced with delicate sarcasm. I looked down at the frumpy denim jumper I wore. "Thanks, it was my mom's." His eyes went wide.
"Oh my God, Macy, I'm sorry."
I threw a piece of potato skin at him. "I'm kidding. Dad got it for me. I felt like I needed to wear it sometime." He looked scandalized. Then he grinned.
"You're evil," he hissed.
"You mess with the bull," I said, holding up my index and pinky fingers. "You get the horns." I felt him watching me and hoped he saw my smile. Mom always had a wicked sense of humor. Dad sat watching the Niners game with feigned interest with Mr. Nick and the boys until Miss Dina called us in to eat. There was a ritual once we were at the table, a choreographed scene that Dad and I followed carefully. Everyone sat in their chairs and linked hands. Mr. Nick said grace, and then everyone went around in turn and said something they were thankful for this year. George was thankful for making varsity track. Miss Dina was thankful for her healthy baby girl, who slept quietly in a vibrating baby chair near the table. Nick Jr. was thankful that he was nearly done with his first semester of college, because, man, it sucked. Dad was thankful for a good year in business and a wonderful daughter. Andreas was thankful for his girlfriend Amy. Mr. Nick was thankful for his boys and his now two girls. He winked at his wife. Elliot was thankful for the Sorensen family, and especially for Macy, who he missed during the week when she was back home. I sat, staring at him and trying to find something else to say, something as good as that. I focused on a spot on the table as I spoke, my words wavering. "I'm thankful that high school isn't terrible so far. I'm thankful I didn't get Mr. Sign for math." I look up at Elliot. "But mostly, I'm thankful we bought this house, and that I was able to make a friend who wouldn't make me feel weird for being sad about my mom or wanting to be quiet, and who will always have to explain things to me twice because he's so much smarter than I am. I'm thankful that his family is so nice, and his mom makes such good dinners, and Dad and I didn't have to try to make a turkey all by ourselves." The table fell quiet, and I heard Miss Dina swallow a few times before she said brightly, "Perfect. Let's eat." And the routine dissolved as frenzy took over, with four teenage boys diving into the food. Rolls were passed, turkey and gravy were slopped onto my plate, and I savored every single bite. It wasn't as good as Mom's everyday cooking, And Mom was missing something she would have absolutely loved, a room full of boisterous family. But it was the best Thanksgiving I'd ever had. I didn't even feel guilty for feeling that way, because I know Mom would want me to have more and better forever. Back home later, Dad walked me upstairs, standing behind me and brushing my hair like he used to do while I brushed my teeth.
"I'm sorry I was so quiet tonight,"
he said haltingly. I met his eyes in the mirror. "I like your kind of quiet. Your heart isn't quiet." He bent, pressing his cheek to my temple, and smiled at me in the mirror.
"You're an amazing girl, Macy Leah."
Now, Friday, October 13th. More miraculous even than a full night's sleep is the prospect of a full day off on a weekend. Getting a free Saturday feels like being 10 years old and holding a $20 bill in a candy store. I don't even know where to start. Well, that's not entirely true. I know I don't want to spend a second of the day indoors. The Mission Bay site for UCSF Children's has windows everywhere, but when you're a pediatric resident, you don't notice anything but the child in front of you, or your chief telling you where you need to be next. Friday afternoon, on a short break after rounds, I remind Sean of our plans to picnic at Golden Gate Park. I call Sabrina, confirming that she, Dave, and Viv can all come. I invite a couple old friends from my Berkeley neighborhood who still live in the area, Nikki and Danny. And then I get back to work with the feeling of buzzing in my ears, static in my thoughts. I can't leave this unfinished all day. After delivering an update on some blood work to my current favorite parents, whose daughter is an inpatient in oncology, I sprint to the break room, ducking behind the locker to grab the phone and text Elliot. "A few of us are going to Golden Gate Park tomorrow for a picnic. Think you'd want to come along?"
"What time were you thinking?" "Was going to head up to Hburg for the afternoon, but could be persuaded."
"We're meeting at 11 outside the Botanical Garden. It's totally fine if you can't make it. I know it's last minute. Just a few of my friends and Sean, etc."
"I'll be there. I'd love to meet everyone."
Then, Wednesday, December 31st, 14 years ago. Boys suck. The wind whipped across us where we were hunkered down at Goat Rock Beach again, preparing for a weenie roast with our families, flag football, and New Year's Eve fireworks over the ocean.
"Do I want to know?"
Elliot asked, not even looking up from his book. "Probably not." In all fairness, I didn't have strong feelings for any boys at my school. But it seemed like, since we began high school 4 months ago, none of them had any feelings whatsoever for me. Danny, my best guy friend, told me that his friends Gabe and Tyler both thought I was cute, but, as he put it, a little too, like, into books. I couldn't escape it. Everyone was starting to go out with everyone else. I hadn't even so much as kissed a boy. Guess I'd be going to the ninth grade dance with Nikki. Elliot glanced over at me.
"Can you tell me more about how boys suck?"
"Boys don't want girls who are interesting," I complained. "They want girls with boobs and who wear slutty clothes and flirt." Elliot slowly put his book down on a patch of beach grass beside him.
"I don't want that."
Ignoring this, I went on. "And girls do want boys who are interesting. Girls want the shy geeks who know everything and have big hands and good teeth and say sweet things." I bit my lips closed. I might have said too much. Elliot beamed at me, metal finally gone, his teeth perfect.
"Do you like my teeth?"
"You're weird." Changing the subject, I asked, "Favorite word?" He stared out at the ocean for a few breaths before saying,
"Cynosure."
"What does that even mean?"
"It's a focal point of admiration. What about you?"
I didn't even have to think. "Castration." Elliot winced. He stared down at his hands in his lap, turning them over and inspecting them carefully.
"Well, for what it's worth," he whispered, "Andreas thinks you're cute."
"Andreas?" I heard the shock in my own voice. I narrowed my eyes as I stared down the beach at where Andreas and George wrestled and tried to imagine kissing Andreas. His skin was good, but his hair was too shaggy for my taste, and he was a little bit of a meathead. He said that? He's with Amy. Elliot scowled, picking up a small rock and throwing it toward the thrashing surf.
They broke up, but I told him if he touched you, I would kick his ass.
I barked out a loud laugh. Elliot was too rational to be offended by my reaction. What Andreas lacked in brains, he made up in serious muscle.
Yeah, so he tackled me. We wrestled. We broke Mom's vase. You know that ugly one in the hall?
Oh, no. My distress was convincing, but I was mostly elated they'd been fighting over me.
She grounded us both.
I bit my lip, trying not to laugh. Instead, I stretched out on the sand, returning to my book and lost myself in the words, reading over and over again the same phrase. It seemed to travel with her, to sweep her aloft in the power of song, so that she was moving in glory among the stars, and for a moment, she too felt that the words darkness and light had no meaning, and only this melody was real. Hours may have passed before I heard a throat clear behind us, saw Dad appear. His frame blocked out the sun, casting a cool shadow over where we lay. I registered only once he was there that I had slowly shifted, so I was lying with my head on Elliot's stomach in our secluded stretch of sand. I pushed to sit up, awkwardly.
What are you guys doing?
Nothing, we said in unison. I could hear immediately how guilty our joint answer made us sound.
Really?
Dad asked. Really? I answered, but he wasn't looking at me anymore. He and Elliot were having some kind of male wind talker exchanged that included prolonged eye contact, throat clearing, and probably some mysterious form of direct communication between their Y chromosomes.
We were just reading.
Elliot said finally, his voice shifting deeper midway through the sentence. I'm not sure if this sign of his impending manliness was reassuring or damning as far as my dad was concerned. Seriously, Dad? I said. His eyes flickered to mine.
Okay.
Finally, he seemed to relax and squatted down next to me.
What are you reading?
A Wrinkle in Time.
Again?
It's so good. He smiled at me, reaching out to swipe his thumb along my cheek.
Hungry?
Sure. Dad nodded and stood, making his way toward where Mr. Nick was busy building a fire. A few seconds passed before it seemed like Elliot was able to exhale.
Seriously? I think his palms are the size of my entire face.
I imagined Dad's hand gripping Elliot's entire face, and for some reason the image was so comical it made me laugh out a sharp cackle.
What?
Elliot asked. Just, that image is funny.
Not if you're me and he's looking at you like he has a shovel with your name on it.
Oh, please. I gaped at him.
Trust me, Macy. I know dads and daughters.
Speaking of my dad, I said, adjusting my head on his stomach to be more comfortable. Guess what I found last week?
What?
He has dirty magazines. A lot of them. Elliot didn't respond, but I definitely felt him shift beneath me. They're in a basket on the top shelf in the far corner of his closet at the cabin, behind the nativity scene. This last part felt somehow very important.
That was oddly specific.
His voice vibrated along the back of my head, and goosebumps spread across my arms. Well, that's an oddly specific place to put something like that, don't you think?
Why were you in his closet?
He asked. That's not the point, Elliot.
It's precisely the point, Mace.
How? He placed a bookmark between the pages and sat up to face me, forcing me to sit up too.
He's a man. A single man.
Elliot used the tip of his index finger to push his glasses up and held my gaze sternly.
His bedroom is his fortress of solitude. His closet is his vault. You might as well have been looking in his nightstand drawer under his mattress.
My eyes widened.
What were you expecting to find on the top shelf in the far corner of his closet behind the nativity scene?
Photo albums? Cherished mementos of a lost youth? Winter sweaters? Things of a parental nature? I paused, giving him a guilty smile. My Christmas presents? Shaking his head, he turned back to his book.
Snooping will always end badly, Mace. Always.
I considered this. Dad didn't date much. Well, ever, that I could think of, spending most of his time at work or with me. I'd never given a moment of thought to this sort of thing where he was concerned. I found the bent corner in my copy of A Wrinkle in Time and settled back onto the patch of grass behind me. It's just gross, that's all. Elliot laughed, a loud, abrupt snort followed by a shake of his head. Glaring at him, I asked, "Did you just shake your head at me?"
"I did."
He used a finger to hold his place in the book.
"Why is it gross? The fact that your dad has the magazines or that he uses them to..."
Reflexively, I covered my ears. "Nope, nope. I swear if you finish that sentence, I will kick you in the balls, Elliot Petropoulos. Not everyone does that." Elliot didn't answer, just picked up his book and continued reading. "Do they?" I asked weakly. He turned his head to look at me.
"Yes, they do."
I was silent for a moment while I digested that. "So, you do that too?" The flush crawling up his neck betrayed his embarrassment, but after a few seconds he nodded. "A lot?" I asked, genuinely curious.
"I suppose that depends on your definition of a lot. I'm a 15-year-old guy with an awesome imagination. That should pretty much answer your question."
I felt like we'd discovered a new hallway door leading into a new room, which contained a new everything. "What do you think about when you do that, I mean?" My heart was a jackhammer beneath my ribs.
"Kissing, touching, sex, parts I don't have and things people do with them,"
he added with a wiggle of his brows. I rolled my eyes.
"Hands, hair, legs, dragons, books, mouths, words, lips."
He trailed off and buried his nose in his book again. "Wow," I said. "Did you say dragons?" He shrugged but didn't look at me again. I eyed him curiously. The mention of books and words and lips had not escaped my attention.
"Like I said," he mumbled into the pages, "I have an awesome imagination."
Now, Saturday, October 14th. "Okay, is it possible I'm beginning to appreciate my scrubs?" I groan. Sean pokes his head into the bedroom.
"What's the problem, babe?"
"Nothing," I say, throwing another shirt onto the pile of rejects on the bed. "It's just, I haven't seen some of these people in forever, and we're having a picnic. I need to look all cute and frolicky because I never get to wear actual clothes. I think I've forgotten how to dress."
"I thought you got dressed up for your dinner last week with him."
"I don't just mean Elliot." Sean's playful smirk tells me he thinks I'm full of shit. And it makes me laugh, but then immediately gives me pause. It actually isn't about looking cute and frolicky for Elliot. He's seen me in everything from formal wear to frumpy overalls to nothing at all. And maybe it's just a chick thing, and explaining it makes it sound absurd, but I want to look cute for my girlfriends. But if Sean thinks I'm agonizing over what to wear for Elliot, shouldn't that bother him? Even a little? Apparently not, because he ducks back out, returning to the basket of food he's packing for the day. I love how much he loves to cook, especially because it is in direct proportion to how much I hate it. I hear him mumble something quietly, and then Phoebe comes in, taking a leap and soaring onto the pile of clothes in the middle of the comforter.
"When are we going to the Bojangles garden?"
I plant a kiss on her forehead. "Botanical. And we're leaving in..." I glance at the clock on the nightstand. "Oof, 20 minutes.
"I like what you're wearing,"
she says, waving vaguely in my direction.
"Daddy says it's wasteful when I change clothes too often."
There are moments I feel it's my job to impart some sort of feminist wisdom to Phoebs, but as usual, Sean's way ahead of me. Having lost interest in my fashion dilemma, she flops over dramatically.
"I'm hungry."
"Want me to get you something? There were some strawberries earlier." She wrinkles her nose.
"No thanks. I'll ask Daddy."
She stands, just as Sean calls from the other room, having heard us.
"I've got a banana for you to eat, Applejack. All the strawberries are already packed up for the picnic."
And before I get any more of her, Phoebe is already out the door and back in the other room. When I think about it, I've had maybe a half hour with her this entire week. I always tell myself that just having a mom presence is a big deal for her, but as we've just witnessed, am I even that? And does she need it? I half wonder whether what Sean mumbled to her before she came in was a reminder that she needs to make me feel welcome here and to come say hi.